It's Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station FM 107.1. Joining us this afternoon, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, as we always like to talk to them about issues, legal issues, but also preparation issues. So with that, I'm not sure of the topic today, but Wes, Cecil, good afternoon to you. What is the topic again today?
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
Good afternoon.
Wes and I today, Lockwood, are going to kind of visit the subject of insurance claims. And right out of the gate, let me say, you know that the purpose of an insurance company is to collect your premium and to deny your claim.
That's the normal theory, yes.
Correct. Collect the premium, deny the claim.
Right.
We have a lot of insurance-related cases in our office. Any lawyer would. Any business is going to be at one point in their the life of the business or personhood or even individual is going to have an insurance matter. And mm-hmm. So insurance is a life event. It's out there, and many people have some questions concerning their insurance coverage and insurance claims. There are also, Wes is going to mention to us here in a moment, but there are some very important deadlines with regard to insurance claims that need to be discussed. So, good afternoon, Wes. I'll let you take it from there.
Lockwood, you know, we deal with insurance issues quite often at Harvell and Collins. You know, normally, they're property loss type cases. Of course, as a result of Hurricane Florence and to a lesser degree, Hurricane Dorian and other storms we've had, you know, we deal with these issues quite often. We also deal with life insurance issues for our clients quite often.
Okay, I'm curious. So, life insurance. I'm sitting here thinking. Normally, under a life insurance policy, the insured is receives their benefits, and I'm sorry, the beneficiaries, the insured, individual identified in the insurance. But I'm a little surprised that life insurance would be an issue that periodically rises. I interrupted your thought on that, but it just surprised me when you said that.
Well, you know, folks need to realize that in the event they have a problem with the insurance company paying, and this could be on a hurricane claim, it could be a fire claim, it could be life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
It could be as a result of someone's passing away. Then some people think that they don't really have options, okay? And the reason that the insurance company has given to deny the claim is just the way it is, because the insurance company and the adjuster, they're the experts. They know how these policies work, and that's just the way it is. Well, that's really not the way it is. When folks end up in a situation where, number one, there's a delay in payment on the claim, or number two, the insurance company is asking for an examination under oath. Okay, that's like a deposition without a lawsuit pending, an examination under oath relative to an insurance claim, then that should be an indicator for the person dealing with this that they should contact an attorney to represent their interest regarding this. I would never recommend anyone going into an examination under oath relative to an insurance matter without an attorney representing them.
Okay. Question for you, Wes, and again, Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell. Harvell and Collins, we're talking with them. Let's Talk Legal. We're talking about insurance and insurance claims. Does the notice of an examination under oath come directly to the insured, or in this, if it's a life insurance, a beneficiary?
Yes, and it's normally very casual.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's normally, okay, we want to set up your what's called an examination under oath. We're just going to ask you some questions. This is in your policy. We have the right to do this. It's just a procedure we go through. It shouldn't be a problem. And in many cases, it's kind of implied that once we get through this step, then we'll be able to go ahead and pay.
All right.
Well, the examination under oath, in almost every instance, in my experience, is the insurance company's attempt to get information from you to support their position of denying the claim.
Okay.
So there's some angle going on that they're not telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that some angle they want to develop with questions that are maybe tricky, but maybe not tricky, but maybe just questions that are specifically directed towards something that you don't even know is coming. You don't even know is out there. But a good attorney is going to be able to identify those issues before you ever get into the examination under oath and help you to, you know, preserve your claim.
What?
For example, one we had, this was a hurricane claim. They were denying coverage on the claim because it was a second home based on recollection, mm-hmm. and there was an issue about whether the person was using the property as a second home and whether they had the correct type of policy or not.
Right.
Well, the facts were that it really wasn't a second home. It was the allegation by the insurance company was it was a second home. It wasn't being occupied, and as a result of it not being occupied, they had the right to deny the coverage because it was represented on the application as in some certain way that may have been ambiguous. So they were trying to establish factually that they didn't have to pay. Well, we identified that issue before we ever got to the examination under oath, and we were able to provide all the evidence that showed that we were within the four corners of the contract, the insurance contract, and then the insurance company paid. So in the event this person did not have an attorney, you know, there could have been some things that were set on the record that were problematic. Okay. As far as life insurance goes, jumping around a little bit here, but as far as life insurance goes, there is normally in North Carolina a 2-year contestability clause in every life insurance contract. What that is it allows the insurance company to contest the coverage for a period of 2 years from the date that the policy was issued. Okay, they can't contest it forever, but they can do it for 2 years, and that's normally based on things like, well, your application wasn't entirely accurate because you did have a medical issue, or you developed a medical issue at some point in time and you didn't notify us of that. Okay, I have one right now that I'm dealing with. I'm not going to get too much into the details, but the insurance company has provided a denial letter, and the denial is entirely inconsistent with the plain language written in the agreement. Now, they have tried to read in all they can to keep from paying this $500,000 to the surviving spouse. But the way they've interpreted the policy is not at all consistent with the language in the insurance policy itself. And, you know, we all have to live with the words in the life insurance policy. It is written the way it's written. You can't read into it some meaning that is not specifically set forth in the document. And in the event that there is an ambiguity, if there is some ambiguous language in the policy, well, the law in North Carolina and in most states is that if it is found that there is an ambiguity, which would basically be an interpretation that could go toward the insured or toward the insurer, okay, in the document, then that is always construed against the insurance company, okay, and it's always construed to for the purpose of finding that the insurance must pay, okay? So sometimes we end up with situations where, based on whatever the facts may be, that there is a there's an ambiguity in the policy. And a lot of times these ambiguities come up in a situation where you've got an application of insurance and you provide some information regarding your health or regarding your profession, regarding, your daily lifestyle, those mm-hmm. type of things. And then there's potentially a duty to supplement that for a short period of time if anything changes. But the language of the policy normally is very specific as to what you have to supplement. And sometimes you get into ambiguity or a conflict between the language of the policy and maybe the particular circumstances as to whether there's anything that that was required to be supplemented. Okay, so the bottom line with regard to kind of that topic there, I know there's a lot of legalese that I just put out there, but the bottom line with regard to that is that if people out there in the listening world, if they or they know people or themselves, whoever it may be, have an issue with their insurance, don't think that if you go to your agent that you may have a great relationship mm-hmm. with, your local person, and your agent tells you, well, that's all we can do because that's the way the policy's written, or the adjuster, if it's a claim, hurricane claim or fire claim. And they indicate, well, this is all we can pay, and it's way less than what you think you're entitled to, or they don't pay anything, that's the end of the road. That is not at all the end of the road. I couldn't really be any more adamant about it. You do need to get competent legal counsel to review the circumstances, review your policy, review the denial letter, and the determination of the insurance company, and advise you with regard to whether you have a valid claim or not. Now, and I've seen so many cases where people have not done that. They have just, kind of in good faith relied upon their people that have always handled their insurance, and they've left, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars on the table because they didn't really realize that in reality, the insurance company they're wanting to keep money in their pocket right. and not pay when they can.
We're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell this afternoon here on Let's Talk Legal. Of course, Wes is talking about the issue of insurance and insurance claims. Wes, I want to go back to something you said at the outset, and I apologize for interrupting your thoughts here on this one, but this is a big question. It has to do with the examination under oath. You said it came in the form of, the indication or notification comes in the form of a letter. What is that examination involve? Does it involve a physical presence with an insurance representative and in front of whom? And what are, is the insured notified of the questions that will be asked in that examination?
Right. Not notified of the questions that will be asked. You're not provided information in most cases as to what the topics will be. The questioner is an attorney.
Oh, really?
Hired by the insurance company.
The insurance company has an attorney at the
They hire an attorney for purposes of conducting the examination under oath. They do not provide notice of the topics or the questions. There will be a court reporter there to take down everything that's said under oath. This is a sworn statement. This normally, historically, has been done face to face, but in the world post COVID, we've all learned about right. depositions and right. examinations taken via Zoom or WebEx or whatever that type of remote program would be. So sometimes they're done in that way. So that's how that process works. It's almost like walking to court
uh-huh.
without an attorney.
Right.
When there's hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, at play.
That's
not a good idea.
No, I'm sitting here kind of stunned by this. A lot of people have never experienced, well, most people don't have large claims, I guess, in many instances, but this is an examination under oath. Obviously, Is the insured notified of who will be in attendance, or they just show up at a meeting and suddenly discover they're sitting there in front of a lawyer and someone to take notes and to I mean, this is a kind of a frightening experience, it seems to me.
Well, like I said, I mean, normally this experience is this process is explained as something as, well, just one more thing we need to check off the box before we can take care of the claim. Well, okay, now, that's not really what it is. What it is it's a process that we're going through to gather information because there's something going on with the insurance. There's some issue that, or maybe issues that they believe need to be explored, normally always in to the benefit and favor of the insurance company in the examination under oath, okay, so as to deny your claim. I mean, keep in mind, they're taking an examination under oath at a time when they haven't paid you yet.
Mm-hmm.
Why have they not paid you yet? Why have they not approved the claim yet? Because there's some going on, and they have not put you on notice, almost certainly, as to what that issue is. Now, if you have an attorney, in advance of the examination under oath, then you can somewhat control the process, okay? First of all, the attorney may make the decision for you not to sit for the examination under oath.
Okay.
You don't have to do this. This is something that insured sometimes get into because, like I said, it's been described to them as a process we need to go through before we can go ahead and approve your claim. Well, you know, normally in an examination under oath, once that's done, the money doesn't all of a sudden come to you. Normally they've developed some type of issue that continues to be an issue unless you've had competent legal counsel there addressing the offense. So be it as it may, your attorney can make the decision as to along with you as to whether you actually sit for the examination under oath. The attorney can make inquiries with regard to what the purpose of the examination under oath is prior to the examination under oath. And it's possible, likely, that the insurance company may provide some information to you or to your attorney for that, so you're on notice as to what the issue is before you ever get there. The date, the time, the place, we can control those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Most importantly, having your attorney there so your attorney can raise objections. I mean, this is not a lawsuit proceeding, but could indicate what areas where your client direct your client not to answer questions.
Okay.
Okay. We're not going to answer questions about that. You know, what's the relevance of that? Then you would potentially require the attorney asking the questions to provide a description as to why they're asking these type questions. Okay, so there's just so many pitfalls that a good attorney can steer you away from, and can then put you in a position where in many cases where the insurance will pay consistent with your policy that you've been paying for it for many years in most cases.
See, Wes, I want to stop here with a couple of quick questions for you. Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and we're learning about insurance claims and the fact that it's not as simple as you may be told. The first question for you, Wes, is obviously if I have a claim, I think the first thing you'd want to see is my insurance policy so that you can
Absolutely.
Review it, okay?
This, yep.
The second question then goes to the purpose of this examination under oath. Obviously, it's the collection of information on behalf of the insurance company, as I understand it. And then if they decide that they're going to use this information as justification for not paying full claim or any claim at all, then is that used in a case in the court of law as evidence on behalf of the insurance company? Is that really the purpose of the examination under oath?
Well, it's twofold. Number one, they want to gather information that allows them to deny the claim, because if they don't have the information and they deny the claim, then they could get in trouble, okay? And what I mean by that, and that's kind of putting it down in, down into very basic terms, saying they can get in trouble. But what I'm saying is that insurance companies cannot deny a claim in bad faith. So if they're denying a claim, but they're not doing so based on good faith, based on the true language of the policy, or based on assumptions and not facts, then they could potentially be held responsible in a lawsuit where the insured may sue them for bad faith denial of the claim, which carries with it potentially treble damages, three times damages, and attorney's fees. Okay, so insurance companies, they're in a superior position compared to the insured. They hold the money. The average person making an insurance claim has not made many insurance claims or any insurance claims in their life before. They don't understand how this works. So it's implied that the insurance company is going to comply with their fiduciary duty, the insured, and make sure that the policy is properly interpreted, make sure that the claim is processed properly, and that the payout is correct. And in the event that they don't do that, and that's brought to light by, you know, a good attorney who brings a proper claim, then they could not only owe under the policy, but owe you three times under the policy,
right?
Plus your attorney's fees under our unfair and deceptive trade practices statute. So they're wanting to, you know, gather information that would give them a reason to deny, and also just the information that would support their argument that they made this decision in good faith.
All right, this question now goes to time, and I know there's a statute of limitations on these issues as well, but an insurance company, it's really the reaction or response from the insurance company when the claim is paid, or notification of the insured that there is some question. Is there a time frame that in which the insured needs to be notified, either with payment or notification that we have a problem with this claim, or we need more information? Is there a time frame on this? Because, you know, it's interesting, you mentioned in the life insurance issue, and we may not have time to get to this today, the insurance company has a two-year time frame. What about in casualty insurance and things of this nature? Are there specific times, once the claim is made, within 60 days, 90 days, there needs to be some response from the insurance company? Is there built-in time frames here?
Right. So, I mean, normally, when we're talking about hazard insurance, we're talking about wind and hail, flood, these types, fire, these type of policies, there is some responsibility, of course, on the insured, of course, to let the insurer know about the claim.
Right.
Okay. And then there's normally two aspects to the claim. You've got the property loss itself as it relates to the dwelling. All right. And that would be, you know, damage to the house.
Okay.
And then you've got the personal property side of it. The personal property side is, in many cases, more laborious to put together, your loss of personal property.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you got to deal with all these issues, your personal property loss. There's also stuff like loss of use, that type of thing. So there is a certain burden on the insured to gather the information and provide it to the insurance company. Okay, so the insurance company can't really process the full claim until they have all the information. So, but the insurance company needs to act reasonably in dealing with the insured to help guide them through the process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they can't just say, well, there's a claim and we're just going to leave you out there and let you figure it out. Well, they have to communicate with you so that they tell you, you know, what they need from you, such as your proof of loss. It's going to have all your personal property on it, or, you know, they're going to help you with the adjustment regarding the loss of the property. Of course, they're going to send an adjuster out, right? So there's that process. So there's not really like a set time frame where you are going to hear back from the insurance company, because there's certain things that the insured has to do in order to facilitate and advance the claim. Now, what's most important with regard to timing is your statute of limitations for bringing suit. Mm-hmm. If it's a residential claim, meaning it's a home, mm-hmm. then you're almost always going to be in a 3-year statute of limitations. That's 3 years from the date of the loss. That's 3 years from the date, the first date that you had damage from Hurricane Florence, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That's, we had a radio program last fall when we were right up at the 3-year right. window. We talked about that. We did bring a good number of lawsuits within that window that the insurance company had not paid properly on, have mm-hmm. gotten great results, but normally a 3-year window on that. Now, if you have a commercial lines policy, this could be, you know, a business, this could be a church, this could be, you know, anything other than a residence. If it's a commercial lines policy, it's potentially written in a different state. It's potentially written out of Indiana or New York or
right.
you know, wherever it may be. In these states, these commercial lines policies, there's an exception in North Carolina that doesn't automatically require a three-year statute of limitations. Normally, you're going to see a 1-year or a 2-year statute. Sometimes you have that modified somewhat by a rider on the policy. If you say you have a wind and hail rider, it may kick it up to a 3-year statute of limitations. So if you have a commercial loss, you know, it, in my experience, it's almost, I would say it's worth getting your attorney involved right at the beginning.
Right.
Because the devil's in the details, and some of these policies have some really crazy language in them that you're going to potentially lose a lot of your claim if you don't act pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Residential claims, again, a little bit longer period of time. But if with any of these claims, I go back to what I said before. If the insurance company is being unreasonable, they're denying your claim unreasonably, they're not paying what they should pay according to what you believe, they're interpreting something in a strange way, you just don't understand it, or they're asking for an examination under oath, those are all the things that should send you directly to your attorney to help you with it. And it may be that your attorney has to be minimally involved, and you end up, you know, maybe spending a very small amount of money with your attorney. But that very small amount of money turns into hundreds of thousands of dollars for
right.
you because the attorney gets the insurance company to pay under the policy.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of the time frames. 3 years with your residential, and then with your commercial-type property loss claims, it can be a much shorter statute of limitations, 1 year, 2 years. Sometimes 3 years.
You know, the conclusion I'm bringing from this, and we've got Wes Collins with us telling, and Cecil Harvell, but Wes here talking to us about the issue of insurance claims. Wes, and we don't have enough time. I have a few questions I wanted to ask you on life insurance. Maybe we can do that next week. But one of the things that comes out of this, I'm looking at this, is that in cases of, and of course, we've talked about this in estate planning and estate management and things of this nature, then, and Wes, or Cecil, I'll probably lean to you on this one, it's also very important now to bring to the table, if you're planning your estate management and issues of this nature, all the paperwork, including insurance coverage, so that you have an understanding of what the entire picture. I'm thinking also, Wes, that in some instances it wouldn't hurt to periodically take to our attorneys our insurance documents, particularly in the case of commercial, and just say, let's review these very quickly. Am I thinking correctly on those?
Particularly in the case of commercial, I would agree with that.
Wow.
Absolutely. You don't want to be underinsured. You want to have an understanding about what kind of policy you have. Do you have a replacement value policy?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a policy that's going to depreciate your assets significantly and only pay the recovery based on a depreciated value? What's the true value to rebuild your house in case it burns down?
Uh-huh.
These type of issues. Is your personal property coverage adequate? Is your loss of use adequate? You know, there's a lot of moving parts you know, with regard to that. Normally, I would say that your that your insurance agent is probably going to be sufficient with regard to answering these type of questions for you. Just a lot of folks don't know what questions to ask, and, but they'll normally send you down the right path with regard to these things, because obviously they want to act in the best interest of their customer,
mm-hmm.
because they're selling you something. First of all, they're in a different dynamic than they're not dealing with the situation of the claim itself. They're dealing with selling you a product. So they're going to want to sell you the best product because they want to make the money on the more expensive product. That's part of the reason. No offense to any insurance agents out there. I mean, that's just kind of the way I see it. They normally do a good job of taking care of those issues, but it is advisable, I think, for folks, especially with commercial policies, you know, to have their agent or their attorney examine, you know, what they actually have. Primarily, you can look at the declaration page, the policy itself, and any riders to the policy, and that can give you a very good snapshot or picture of what coverage that you have in the event of a loss. So, yes, I would say that that's advisable to do that. I'd say less important for residential, but commercial policies sometimes end up being you know, confusing. And then, you know, when does the confusion get settled?
Right.
After the loss.
Right.
And then you've got to live with the policy.
You've got to live with it. You know, as we wrap it up with Wes Collins, and of course Cecil Harvell, Cecil was listening in on this as well. Harvell and Collins, and the number, by the way, 252-726-9050, that's 726-9050, or harvellandcollins.com. Wes, walking away from this conversation, I'm thinking we purchase our insurance pretty much annually. There may be times when we purchase it on a biannual basis, but annually, and we forget about it, and until we have a claim. And as you just point out, sometimes that's a little late to think about that, particularly in the area of commercial property. With that, Wes, as always, I appreciate your time this afternoon, and Cecil, likewise, Harvell and Collins. And remember, that website, harvellandcollins.com, or give them a call, 252, area code 726-9050.